I'm Kimberly C. Palm. As I travel throughout each state, I realize that death is just a moment. It is how we live until that moment that matters. Finding connection with friends, family, and complete strangers. Journey with me. This is the Live Well, Die Well Tour. This is Kimberly Paul. Welcome to Death by Design podcast. Today, we're really fortunate to talk to Dean Cantu. He is the Associate Dean and Director of Education Counseling in the Leadership Department at Bradley University. Dean, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you for having me on.
So tell me, what do you do at Bradley University?
My administrative role is that of the Director and Associate Dean for the Department of Education Counseling and Leadership, which is home to 16 undergraduate teacher preparation baccalaureate degree programs, as well as the home to 8 of our graduate degree and certificate programs. That range from counseling, professional school counseling, and clinical mental health counseling, all the way through ed leadership and nonprofit leadership.
Well, I was just happy to see leadership a part of a university, because so many people get to be leaders with like baptism by fire. And I really do feel like it does come with a certain specific and unique skill sets to be a good leader. So I was really sort of happy to see that in like a department head. So I touche for Bradley University for concentrating on leadership as a skill.
Well, I appreciate that. And like you, I think that's absolutely critical. You're right, there is a unique skill set and knowledge base that goes along with being a leader. And we've embedded that within our programs. And in terms of my administrative role, In another life, I was in the Army. I was a military intelligence officer, and I know that there was a lot of my training there that focused on leadership, and that's helped to define or guide me in terms of my role as an academic leader as well.
Oh, that's really cool. I'm ex-Navy Reserve Intel, was stationed in Damnick, Virginia. So we have also that in common, which is really unique. But that's another whole world. You know, but we're not here to really talk about your role at Bradley University. What's interesting to me is how I stumbled upon you and your TED Talk, and you were really talking about death and dying and how we talk about that. But before we get started, you do have a personal story that inspired you to examine your own perspective on death and dying. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. Prior to coming to higher education, I was actually a high school teacher, and I taught social studies, in particular sociology, psychology, and history. And so from an academic side, I've taught about death and dying, whether it's in a, you know, introducing, you know, Kubler-Ross in a sociology class, or talking about the Black Plague or the Black Death in my history classes. But it really sort of hit home to me when a few years ago, my mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and I saw her go through the transformation that occurs when someone has a terminal diagnosis. And so it gave me time to, I guess, sort of take that academic background that I had with death or death and dying and apply it to the real world situation that I was confronted with. And so at this nexus sort of came my interest and later my research efforts relative to looking at how we, you know, personify death, you know, give it some anthropomorphic form. So for me, as I was there with my mom, every opportunity I could have, I sort of looked back on that and thought about death. But now I'm looking at it and trying to assign some sort of personification to death. And I go back and try to retrieve those personifications I've come across, in teaching history of the Black Death, whether it's the Grim Reaper, that kind of thing, or more current personifications of death in film or in literature. Knowing that there wasn't going to be some manifestation of that form of death, it still allowed my mind to sort of reflect back on all that I had taught about and learned relative to death and dying and the personification of death.
Well, I think that provides this really unique perspective, because sometimes reality is not so much how we write about it. And the crossroads I found very fascinating. You know, what did your mother's death teach you about how you wanted to face your death? Or should I really say, you know, what did your mother's death teach you about how you want to live?
I think that those are great questions, because both of those were sort of takeaways, if you will, from my experience with my mother. I'll go with the latter first. In terms of death itself, to me, it really is a part of our lives. It really does inform us and give meaning to life. In fact, you know, in doing my research, you'll find, philosophers and others in literature will talk a lot about that. That if you get down to it, life really would have a limited value if it were not for death, if it were not for the fact that we have such a short time. And so we need to appreciate that and try to wring from that as much as possible. So it was in seeing my mother's condition, it allowed me to reflect back on her life, which I felt, although it was going to be cut short, she had just turned 61, I still felt it was a life well lived. It was such because of death, because death is part of life. The other thing about death itself is it's one of those things, you know, as I started again doing research, it's one of those things that I found, you know, it really does, you know, transcend, you know, temporal and spatial boundaries. It doesn't matter where you're at. It doesn't matter what period of history. There's always been this sort of fascination with death itself as a topic. And it really, you know, there was one quote I came across by Andre Malraux, where he talks about every civilization is haunted visibly or invisibly by what it thinks about death. And I found that to be so true, and perhaps more so now than ever before.
I tend to agree with you as well. And, you know, during this whole, my whole experience working within the field of death and dying, and even experiencing some very personal deaths with Rob, my boyfriend who died at 30 with melanoma, you know, I've noticed that we want to try to normalize death. Why do we tend to want to do that? Is it because it is normal, or, you know, has it not ever been abnormal? I mean, no one lives forever.
That is one of the things that I think I most is piqued my curiosity and my interest most in terms of my research, is that we really have a strong desire, whether we're cognizant or not, to try to normalize death. And I think some of that is in doing so, I think we feel that some way that we will gain the upper hand, that we will somehow be able, I don't know necessarily, it's probably too strong a thing to say that we'll achieve some immortality, but I think it's that quest or that desire that virtually everyone has for immortality, that if we can come in and try to normalize death, then perhaps we can create a level playing field, if you will. It's a fascinating topic, and it's been captured in film and in literature, of individuals, for example, you know, challenging death, you know, to a game of chess or something, you know, as though we're going to become, we'll be the victors and we'll achieve, you know, immortality along the way. I think that's part of that. Even though we know we're not going to get to that point, I think that's one of the reasons that we try to normalize it, is so that we can help to better comprehend the magnitude of what awaits us all.
Well, you know, you bring up film and television, and you know the things that I've seen that, you know, talk about being, you know, you're not able to die tend to be vampires, and they feel like, you know, living forever is such a burden that they don't want it. They want to die. But it really is fascinating that even the stories played who do have immortality tend to see it as more of a curse.
Well, you're right. It's one of those things that and we see it now. In particular, we see sort of the morphing of mythology with modern day graphic novels or comic books. Now, if you look at a lot of the comic book heroes or characters, if you will, most recently, I think if you look at Thanos in the Avenger movies. Where basically wipes out half of all of the population, and he does so sort of to try to be benevolent to help because we're running out of food and all this other sort of thing, and he's trying to woo the favor of another character who is Death or the Mistress of Death. But it goes back to like Greek mythology. The god of nonviolent death is Thanatos. Who was a psychopomp that would, transport souls to the underworld. But you get everything. What I think is incredible about what you're talking about is it goes back to mythology, and it comes up to present day with just this desire to try to introduce death through different means in popular culture, graphic novels and such. But there's this, even in the film, the most recent film, the Avengers movie that just came out. Thanos, deliberated over this. He agonized over this decision, but it was a burden that was, quote unquote, that was placed on him. So you're right. It's something in a strange way, contradictory way, that we try to cheat death. But then when you attain some level of immortality, you want to relinquish that because it's too great of a burden.
And you know what I find throughout this, Live Well, Die Well tour, visiting every state, there's always the individual that, when you ask them, how do you want to die? They often say, in my sleep. And my experience, that rarely happens. But it makes me think, are we afraid of something? And in your academic perspective, what do you think we're afraid of?
I think part of it is we just can't conceive of our own mortality. I think Goethe talks about that. It's just we cannot come to terms with that. And I think, therefore, we can't see the end. We can't sort of conceptualize of it. And so, in thinking about, how I'm going to pass, you'd mentioned something about, how do I want to die, in my sleep. I think we're afraid of any other way of dying because we would be cognizant of it. We almost want it to occur, at a time and a place that we're never cognizant of because, if so, then we'd have to come to terms with the fact that we haven't achieved immortality, even though we know that we haven't. And I think that's one of the things that when death does come, like you said, one of the most popular responses is in my sleep. Or if you look at one of the personifications of death, one of the most popular one is death as a comforter, the angel of death that comes down and comforts you in your time of need and then takes you away. Even at the end, if we're aware of it, if we're lucid, we want it to be death as this angel of death that comes and embraces us and takes us away. That's one of the most popular, depictions of death. And I think it gets back to what you're talking about, is because we can't see it any other way.
I love that explanation of, I've never really connected with why do you want to fall asleep and not wake up? And I think you hit it right on the nail on the head when it comes to being unconscious. We'd have to face certain things. Really, wow, powerful point there. Throughout my life, I think about my mortality every day. And what that does for me is it really sort of wakes me up to the now, this moment that you and I are sharing right now. Because I don't think tomorrow is ever a guarantee. I've seen so many people die young, tragic deaths. And I feel like when I think about my own mortality, it makes me and snaps me out of I'm going to live forever, but I know this is going to end. And how does that end impact me today? You know, what if I had a chance to go sailing? Would this be the last time I go sailing today? You know, so in your opinion, you know, why is thinking about our death really empower us about how we live?
Well, and that's a great question, because I think at the heart of it, I think that's what we strive for is to be empowered, to have some control over our destiny. And I think it does that because, as you mentioned, it serves as a reminder. It's you know, memento mori. You know, we're all going to die, and you need to almost have to be reminded of that to serve as a catalyst, if you will, for action, to translate dreams and thoughts into reality and to operationalize those, because you know that your time is limited, and you also know that you don't. For many of us, we don't know when that end will come. So time is of the essence. And so you're right. I think it gets back to a little bit of what we talked about earlier is because of that, I think it gives more meaning to life. And I think if we allow it to, I think it can guide us in a much greater manner than we might think otherwise. Because of that, I think it causes individuals to move up the queue, those things that are most important. And I'm not talking about in the, you know, in the sense that, you know, people talk about the bucket list, you know, that kind of thing. And that's fine. It's not necessarily a moniker that I subscribe to, but basically behind the bucket list kind of phenomenon, I guess, you know, there is that impetus, that desire to want to accomplish those things that you have in life because of an acknowledgement or a recognition that time is limited. And so, you know, whatever moniker we use, I think if it allows us to do what we want to do in life and not continue to engage in procrastination or try to rationalize not doing what we truly want to do in this life, then if thinking about death, if death is the catalyst for that, then I think we're better served by that. And maybe it gets back to what we talked about. Maybe that's what really gives meaning to life, and maybe not just meaning, but direction.
Yeah. You know, that it's going to end. I tell people that I think of, you know, when you go on vacation, you know, it's going to end. That you really push yourself and to try to experience everything you want to on this really 5-star vacation. So when you get back home, you actually need a vacation from your vacation because you were exhausted. You knew it was going to end, so you pushed yourself. And I feel like that is sort of how I look at my life and death. You know, it's going to end, and it does snap me out of this very awareness that life is short and fragile, and what are we going to do with it? You know, the interesting thing over the last few years that I've noticed is that technology has brought this taboo subject out of the closet. You know, this D word, this thing where we're talking about death, and very much so. Like New York Times in the last few years has over 200 articles about death and dying, and what I've noticed is that we're talking about death and dying more, whether it's through podcasts or blogs or even television series using, you know, certain aspects of medical aid in dying, right in their script, their Hollywood script of trying to bring this to the present. Why do you think we're engaging more these days in these types of conversations than ever before?
I think you're right in terms of seeing it on a much larger scale today than ever before. I think over history, if you look at attempts to talk about death and dying, or to see depictions of death and dying, I think it was for the most part, I mean, you have theological discussions of it. So certainly that it would take place in history. But I think in terms of other sorts of ways in which we see this manifest, it was really sort of reserved to I don't know, the poets, the authors, the painters and the philosophers, so to speak, you know, that's where we see it, you know, more than anywhere. Whereas today, I think I've never thought about it until your question. Maybe it's a populist movement, if you will, more organic in its current manifestation. And maybe it's those means or modes of communication, such as, you know, blogs or podcasts, that have allowed, sort of democratized our ability to talk about it. And because of that, we find that it really is all but ubiquitous, both in terms of its manifestation in podcasts or blogs or obviously in other popular culture like film and television, but also in terms of the consciousness of individuals, you know, that we recognize that it's something that others think about. Because if you think about it, for centuries, it was all but a taboo subject unless it was brought up within the confines of a theological discussion. But now, you know, it's part of just, you know, common discourse to have conversations about death. I think we've made tremendous strides in terms of that. And I think part of it, and I don't know which came first, so to speak, but I think part of it, what we see is what you've talked about. You see it now in terms of discussions of death and dying, and in terms of personifications of death in everything from graphic novels to, gamifications, you know, in games, in podcasts, websites that are dedicated to it, in certainly in articles, in television, you know, programs, in film, as well as obviously in print. It's everywhere, and I think it's because we have been allowed to do it because of this democratization of our ability to engage in this sort of a discourse about death itself and death and dying is why it seems to be more ubiquitous than ever before.
Well, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned your research on personification of death. Can you talk a little bit more of what kind of research are you doing and what sort of things have you discovered?
Absolutely. One of the things in looking at death and dying and looking at particularly at the personification of death, the anthropomorphic form that we give to death, one of the things that I've tried to do is to take the path that I've taken previously, and particularly, as I said, you know, as a teacher in higher education, but also as a former teacher of sociology, psychology, and history, not at the high school level, as well as history at the university level. And I've tried to take that nexus of all of that and investigate it sort of through the lens of a sociologist and a historian, if you will. So in doing the research, therefore, I looked at it from a historical perspective, and I looked for it in terms of how it manifests in art, in literature, in poetry, in music. And then as it progressed into more modern times, I looked at its personification in popular culture, in things such as television and film and other things that we've talked about in terms of the current, you know, digital platforms that are used for that discourse. So once I did that, my research had tremendous breadth initially, and then over time, what I found is it started to crystallize, and it's really more of a naturalistic or qualitative approach here. But I started to look for patterns, and one of the things I found is that there were basically four conceptual patterns or intellectual buckets, if you will, that you could put the personifications of death into. And those were either, and again, it sort of progressed up through history, sort of coincided with that, either the macabre, you know, grotesque personifications, as we've talked about, the Grim Reaper, you know, the Black Death kind. There's the seducer, the romantic side of death. In fact, one of the most popular genres in painting is Death and the Maiden, where you have this rather bizarre juxtaposition of a character, usually a skeleton, Grim Reaper looking character that's juxtaposed alongside a young individual, typically a female, and it just was there to kind of capture that idea that life is fragile, and that we all have to wrestle with their own mortality. And so, you know, you can take youth and you can juxtapose it beside death. And it's just this constant reminder of memento mori, if you will. Other, you know, forms of that I found were things that we talked about, like the angel of death and such. And that's death as a friend and a comforter. So I saw that as a sort of a third category of types of personifications. And then the last one is something tied a little bit more with modern culture, a little bit more contemporary, and that is death as sort of a superhero, almost death in a strange way. But I guess, you know, I call it comedic, where we see sort of a comedic representations of death as a recurring character on, you know, on television shows like The Simpsons or Family Guy, for example, or, death was someone on Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, you know, was a character that they played a series of games with, including Twister. What was neat about that is it actually went back to, you know, Ingmar Bergman's, you know, film The Seventh Seal, you know, where, you know, which was based on a late, you know, 15th century painting about death, being challenged to a game of chess. So there's this theme that we see, and it just goes throughout history. And one of the things I've found is we're doing it, and we're just so often not cognizant of this. It's there, but it's done almost in a surreptitious manner. But it's incredibly sophisticated, because if you look at it, you know, there are hints that go back, you know, to representations or personifications of death that go back for centuries that are being, you know, done in, or that you will see in modern popular culture.
Wow. You know, it is fascinating. And the thing is, you did a TED Talk around this whole personification of death. And, you know, I thought it was fascinating. First of all, anyone who goes through the TED Talk process, it's very intense. And you have to, like, really have this memorized speech that it looks like it's coming off the tip of your tongue. And did you find that, like, intense going through that TED Talk?
Oh, it was. You're exactly right. Unless you've been through it, you don't have the appreciation that I think we should for someone that goes through the preparation. And it really is, you know, for me, and I presume for you, we're talking months and months in advance, and there's that vetting process, and then, like you said, there's this, this memorization that gives the appearance that it's all but impromptu,
right.
This casual conversation that you're having with someone, when in fact you've memorized at least the key prompts that will trigger what will follow. So. You're right. It was definitely something that I'm so pleased to have had the opportunity to do, and particularly to talk about a subject like this that I'm very passionate about.
That's awesome. Yeah, I do share some of the same things that you experienced. But, you know, I want other individuals to see your TED Talk and to really get to know you a little bit more. How do individuals want to learn more about you and your research? How do they find you?
Absolutely. Well, one of the ways, again, I'm at Bradley University. So one of the things is to give me a shout out. Individuals, if they want to, they can certainly go to the Bradley website, or they can just email me at dcantu, dcantu at bradley.edu. I'm on Twitter as well. So if someone wants to reach out with me that way, it's drcan and then the number 2. I also have a website, deancantu.com. And I'm starting another website eventually that I'll link off of that website, where I'm trying to create an index, if you will, for others that have an interest in this area, so that it can link to whether it's films or works of literature or art. So it's a place that is really a conduit to all sorts of other resources that I've come across in my research.
I love it. I love it. And I've checked out your website and your TED Talks on there. So, I mean, it's easy to go right to his website and check out his TED Talk. But what is your TED Talk? And if people want to go to just YouTube and just sort of YouTube it, do you have a name for it?
It is, the name of it is Memento Mori. The personification of death. And so that's one way to get to it. So if you went into Either just did a simple search in Google, or if you went to TEDx and you put that in there, you would come up with it. Sadly, I also recognize the fact that if one were to Google Dean Cantu death, you would come up with it. It's the first thing. Kind of sad. At one point, when I bid this world adieu, it will probably come up before my obituary.
Oh, bless your soul. That's sort of funny. I can't tell you how much I have enjoyed chatting with you and your research and learning more about who you are. What is really cool about your website is that you really open your whole life, and you get to even learn a little bit about your family and just uniquely about why you're so passionate about living. So I really thank you for your time, and thanks for coming on Death by Design podcast and sharing your point of view. And listeners, please check out his TED Talk. It's amazing. And get in touch with him if you want to learn more about, his research around the personification of death. Dean, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kimberly. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember, you're the designer. This podcast is produced by Jason Andre with Seven Season Films. If you're interested in telling your story via podcast, look him up. You can find him at sevenseasonfilms.com.